And welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, September 17th, 2001. In the Creekside Room this morning are Carol Osterlund and Robert Sellers. Today's session number is OSC 2001-01, and it's entitled Elder Hostel, Exploring Life's Stories, The Creative Path of Memoir and Poetry, Part 1. Let's listen in.
I sort of feel like I'm on trial. And I have to say I have to bring you my fears a little bit. I've been a writer all my life, since I was six, as a matter of fact. And, had been published on projects, and I love the writing process, and I've been lecturing on creativity. This is a brand new experience for me, especially this many days. So, I want you to help me. As I put on the bulletin board, the creator is you, and that's what we're going to talk about this morning. Because we are made in God's image, who is the great creator. In the image of God, we are also meant to be created. Telling you a little bit about Robert and me. We met 13 years ago, after the death of both of our spouses in 88. We met late in the year through mutual friends. Robert is a wonderful example of an engineer all his life who felt like he never, ever used his right brain. I'm exactly the opposite. I don't feel like I have a left brain. You see the images where they give you the yin and yang, and are you supposed to see one thing for the right brain? And I always see the right brain image before I see the left brain. But because we really fell in love, and we really shared romance in our 60s and 70s, and now 70s and 80s, we really felt moved that we wanted to say, hey, it's time to go. That life at every age has its joy, and the thrill and excitement doesn't change, and it doesn't have to. So we started putting together some of our thoughts on this, just because we wanted to say to our kids and grandchildren, this is who we are, and this is what we hope you will remember from us. So what happened was our book, which is in the bookstore, and the only reason I'm going to promote it is because if you go and buy it for $10, all $10 goes to Holden Village. So it's the story of our romance. It starts with the foreword, which tells how we met, which is really a miracle story. You have to believe in God and believe that things happen for a purpose. And it starts with how we met. So it was Robert's idea that we include our early letters to each other. Initially, we lived 150 miles apart. So as we were dealing with the loss of our spouses, we were also falling in love, so we wrote letters, and they reflect both of these things of trying to deal with grief and finding out about each other. And then we've been fortunate to travel around most of the world, and so then I've always been a poet, so then I started writing about our travels. And then my sister said, well, I really like your prose, so then you put some little essays in about age and how to deal with life at this age. So that's what it is. It's arrival time. And it tells probably more than you ever want to know about anybody.
Now, well, she seems like it was a long range correspondence, but it actually lasted 10 minutes. One of the days when the mail service was incredible, it was kind of big. Wow.
So our letters would cross, and we wrote lots of letters. In fact, even in that first interim, I discovered that I could... If I was lonesome in the middle of the night, at 3 a.m, and really feeling sad, I felt so comfortable with what I knew of Robert, I would pick up the phone and phone him at 3 a.m, and he would talk. And it just started that way. And he actually did, he'll read in the book, he proposed to me 10 minutes after he walked in my house the first time. And my grandson in Minnesota just now got engaged to be married in 2002. And Robert said, gee, I proposed to your grandmother in 10 minutes. And my grandson just went, oh. So anyway, that's where we are. I'm not going to go around the room and have you all give names again, because I'm sure that you've been getting acquainted. What I would really like to know from all of you is something of what your expectations are. Do you have special things you'd like to do. My overall plan is to do one day on creativity, the meaning of creativity, how to get in touch with your inner source, begin writing if you haven't, try something new if you've written other things. Tomorrow we'll do personal journaling. Wednesday we'll talk a memoir. And then I've got to do a couple of days on poetry, which is my first love. But I cannot do both days on poetry if we need to. Do you have any feedback on that? Any special needs that you would like?
Last night we all went around and said how many elder hostels we had attended. And I contributed to many of them two times. One is when you ask for something special, a request, when they say we'll take it under consideration. And the worst example of that was the University of California at Davis, where the director said, oh, I'll have to bring it up with the Board of Regents, but they will be so much. And then the other type is the director who says, sure, why not? Or like that, it's done, and I think this is that kind of class.
So as it proceeds, please
say what I want is this, and you'll get it.
And then the other thing is, if you all have, knowing that there will be a writing class, if you have brought things that you've been writing, and we don't have time, because of the size of the class, to read and allow in class, I'll have a sign-up sheet here. And please, you know, sign up, and we'll make an appointment, and if you would like to meet one-on-one and just go over what your ideas are and just talk, I'd be really happy to do that. So I'm a pretty good critic on poetry. I know a lot of the forms. I have some idea of how prose should be written. So, I think I can give you some feedback. So with saying that much, let's the creator is you. And I'd like to start with something you won't expect. This is called Kathy Jo Clark. Get ready for school, I hear mother say. So I ask her what I should wear today. I look in my closet. Nothing seems right. The green dress is warm and the jumper too tight. The blue one with pockets looks nice on you. I want to say yuck, but that wouldn't do. Kathy Jo Clark never wears clothes like that. Dresses with pockets that make you look fat. Kathy Jo Clark twirls a baton. Her hair shampooed in a beauty salon. She brings her lunch in a pink paper bag. Her knee socks stay up. Mine always sag. If I had a gown, red velvet with lace, people would bow and call me Your Grace. I'd send invitations to a fabulous ball. Kathy Jo Clark wouldn't get one at all. She would feel sorry when she got the snub that she never asked me to be in her club. If I had a white coat like Dr. Lane, I'd ease every ache and heal every pain. I might find the cure for some rare disease, then eliminate colds and skinned up knees. Save Kathy Jo Clark! Someone would say, I would heal her, of course, but not right away. In each chiffon, I'll walk on the stage. I hear loud applause. I'm the latest rage. I can make people cry. I can make people laugh. And Kathy will ask for my autograph. I will smile sweetly. I'm so glad that you came. Forgive me, my dear. Please tell me. The blue uniform, controls checked and set. I'll clear to the tower and taxi my jet. With full thrust of power, swoosh off the ground, climbing the clouds faster than sound. Alone in the sky with the world growing dark, I won't even think about Kathy Jo Clark. Mother looks in. Are you still standing there? Why can't you decide what you will wear? In my dress with the pockets, I am who I am. I multiply eights and report on Siam. But when I grow up, I could fly a plane, or marry a prince, or heal people's pain. I might be an actress. The list does not end. And Kathy Jo Clark, could be my best friend. But one reason I like to read that, which I wrote many years ago, is that we all see people that we admire and we wish we could be like. You know, it's all through our lives. And I'm sure for the men, there's the president of the football team in high school, or the captain. You know, but when it comes right back down to it, you have to start with the person that you are. You're the one whose knee socks don't stay up, and who can't do all the things. But you do have, I want to say, God-given talent. Everybody does. And you're all creative in different ways. And many times we are not even aware of how much we use this creative source in us. You know, every time you get dressed in the morning, you put on the colors that you'll wear. You know, you do it constantly. And you can really put that over into thinking about your life and remembering special times out of your life and beginning to say, I do have a story to tell. And this is the best gift I can give my children and my grandchildren or my nieces or just anyone, friends. We need to share our stories, I think, now more than ever. So that, you know, that's just my biggest soapbox message that I should give you. Another thing that's a good thing to ask, years ago I went through a real, you know, we all have periods in our lives, and I was, for a period I was alone, and we just happened to have a little beach cottage my father, who was a carpenter, had built. And I used to walk the beach, and I didn't really at that time know where my life was going. I was a married woman. So I began to imagine that if my life was a play, if I could put it in any stage set I could think of, and people with just the ones I would love to be with. And then, you know, so then being a real manipulator, then I put in the dialogue and what everybody would be saying to each other, you know, as, you know, so far. But really, how would you like your life? And actually, at that time, I thought, what I'd really like, I love the pink house at the end of the beach overlooking the water. And if I could live there, even if I were alone, I would love my quiet mornings where I could read and write and reflect. But then along maybe about 2 or 3 in the afternoon, people would drop by, maybe there'd be a big pot of stew on the back of the stove and popcorn and apples. And people would sit and talk and share ideas. And then maybe somewhere along the line, there'd be somebody that would be special that I would meet. And then, so then I thought, well, that's really a pretty wild dream, you know, we sort of have to face life as it is. But then the important step was to say, if I do that, what of that, what essence of that can I bring into my present life? How can I create the feeling of that? I can write in the morning. I can invite friends over. I can be open to possibilities. And I can let things happen. And I think this is, you know, what we do over and over. And I think this is sort of what we have to do now.
Risk.
Yeah. So this is what I really want to ask you. If, right now, what would you do if you didn't have to do it perfectly? No, we live in such an age where if you're really not a writer unless you've sold this many things. You're really not a dancer unless you've had the stage lights focused on you. You know, we live in a time when we're supposed to be professional before we can own that we are this. But, you know, what would you do if you couldn't do it perfectly? You know, would you paint? Would you show your paintings to people? Would you learn to tap dance? You know, write poetry. Find a group. Read it to each other. It doesn't have to be saleable. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's you. It's the wonderful expressive gift of you. This is a crazy thing to read to you. Somebody at our, we go every year to the Santa Barbara Writers Conference, which is always the last week in June, and it's a, well, if any of you are really serious writers and want to perfect your skills, this is just the most wonderful week that they offer everything and more than you can possibly take in a week. And if anybody's interested, I can give you information later on how to find out about it. But our workshop leader in writing just sort of threw out to us, and you know, we're a very wide age range. He says, okay, tomorrow, write me a cowboy song. And one thing about me is that I cannot back down from a challenge. So here's my cowboy song. And I haven't put it to music. And if anybody of you can put it to music, and it's called Lonesome is the Only Place. Now there's no place for me to go but lonesome. The moon is down and nothing lights the trail. A string is busted on my only guitar. And coyotes have forgotten how to wait. I add some wood and keep the campfire blazing and put the saddle underneath my head. I think of friends who joined the game of poker. Now they're either all in jail or maybe dead. Then silence is a long and lonely canyon with ghosts of girls you loved and left to cry. I wonder if it ever gets to morning, is there sun enough to fill the empty sky? Those down and dirty blues just keep on hurting. And no amount of whiskey sets me free. I haven't heard a song that's worth the singing. That's when lonesome is the only place to be. Yeah, why don't you read those and then take over
our topic? Yeah, well, we're partially responsible for what was set down in the course, but I don't know where the profound lines came in. At the end, it says that we were going to generate new stories, random jottings. They're easy for you to jot things down. Anybody who keeps a scratch pad by the phone, you'll be amazed what you can find there. But then it also said that you have to have, we were going to have profound lines. So I have some profound lines to share. That's from a plaque in the Solari Foundation in Arizona, where it's a beautiful place too. Spirit, call me son, that I may seek myself without tiring. Darkness, call me brother, that I may not fear that which I seek. And light, call me friend, that I be not shamed by what I find. And death, call me gently, that I may enjoy what I have been. Here's another one I picked up in some place. It was written by Edmund Morris, who was Ronald Reagan's biographer from the New Yorker. That's where it got released. Why in the age of voicemail, and I might say email as well, is script still the preferred style for messages of great intimacy? Perhaps it is both direct and enduring. Spoken words, whether recorded at long distance or whispered across an inch of pillow, may have greater impact, but they evaporate at once like splashes of acetone. Handwritten words mean more the more they are read, and time only increases their first force. Then something I picked up from a candy wrapper. I dug with promises. Nothing is as strong as gentleness or as gentle as strength. I want you to talk a little bit about what you've been up to. And I had spent, just read the book, I spent 47 years married to a poet. So I fell in love with another poet. So I had to go along real easy. You go and see what there was to do with poetry. And I find that it's a means of expressing what you're feeling or what you observe or what you want to write about and putting it in the most precise form you can. And you write it and then you rewrite it and then you rewrite it and then you rewrite it. And the struggles that poets went through before computers is unbelievable. But believe me, if you can get these things and put them on the computer, you can change them. And no poet ever says the things, a poem is ready until it's finally been published, and then I guess you're supposed to not change it. But even then, you can read it. Oh my gosh, why did I say that?
But that's not necessarily true of everyone. But.
Oh, I know, it is true. I think most people write and rewrite and read. And read and read and read.
So, yeah.
So, I have been challenged by my children, daughter and two sons, to record what has happened in my life. And I think for them, you know, when my daughter finally got 57, I said, boy, I must be getting old. She's so bad. And then in the classes that we attend, why one thing and another, they urged me to write of people who have been a great influence on my life, like my grandmother and so forth. So here's one that I call A Ticket to Life.
And this really, as you listen to this, we chose it is just this. You know, this is free verse. This is just an expression. You write it in the voice that you are, you know, just the way that you would talk it. Really, it's you're not sitting down to write a poem. You're sharing your life experience, and you don't worry about meter or cadence or anything. You are sharing something that you remember from your past, and these are very precious memories. And this one came out in a poem, and you could actually say that it's a little prose piece, but it could be, but it's, you know, it's written with line breaks and this kind of thing. But it is a, you know, that's all right. Yeah.
Oh,
but,
sure.
You know, it's just a, so.
How lucky I am to have a heritage based on tickets to all kinds of wonder. Plays, operas, concerts, and the first talking movie. Polo matches, football games, and train rides. The one I remember most, at 14, a season pass to the Olympics of 1932. The ticket was a gift from my grandmother, a pass to all the events, the freedom to go as I please, stay as long as I wanted, go from venue to venue, following my whim, having a chance to cheer athletes from all over the world. I remember that gift of trust and love, the joy of having choice. For 68 years, the memory remains, the assurance of knowing that ticket is always mine to hold and use. And then when I wrote very early in the class in Santa Barbara, when I was still recovering from the loss of my wife 47 years. It's entitled Stuff. I never knew that I'd be left to finally decide what to do with the accumulated stuff of 37 years and 13 months. Everything so precious, I'd die if it were lost. Boxes full of who knows what. A lifetime of saving so we wouldn't forget, then couldn't remember where it was. 37 years in this house. Our kids grew up. Friends moved away. Pets, parents, and a wife who died, leaving me the task of letting go. How many boxes of who knows what? And my best memories aren't packed with all precious stuff. I have learned that it's the people, all the people I have loved, who make me what I am.
I want to talk a little bit about getting back to the creativity. We all have children that we, most of us have children or grandchildren or nieces or nephews or some way. And I think of the story about the lady that was, or the grandmother that was coloring with her grandson, and he started to color in the lines of tree that was purple. And she said, I never saw a purple tree before. And he said, well, now you have. I always felt really fortunate. I alluded a little bit before that my mother was a writer. And I grew up in this family. They actually called us the Mad Wilsons. My father had studied for the ministry, but decided in the around 1918 that this was not the life for him, a minister at that time. So he became a very happy builder and worked with his hands all through the years. My mother was an accomplished poet, was nominated as Poet Laureate of California one time. Marvelous traditional poetry. I had a brother and two older sisters. And the wonderful thing in growing up, we were all, when I was just a little girl, my father read aloud to us in this beautiful resonant voice that he had. And he read us Tennyson and Longfellow. And I fell in love with a cadence of words. And so words to me are like music. And they have to flow. And even to me, prose has to flow with a certain cadence so it falls off your tongue easily. And but I grew up listening to good poems, all my or good writing all my life. I used to say that other people's mothers wore little house dresses. And you know, my mother, when she discovered Hawaiian moons, hardly ever wore anything else. And she always had pencils sticking out of her very red curly hair and her freckle face, above her freckle face. And we did not have much money. And to serve six of us, most of our dinners, my mother would take a big rectangular pan, the leftover roast from Sunday was cut in chunks. We had cut up carrots and maybe a can of peas thrown in, whatever potatoes were left, and gravy over it all, and baking powdered biscuits dropped on the top, and all put in the oven. But what was different, that we always had, sometime during the evening, or during as the meal was ending, my mother read us her latest sonnet. So we had sonnets for supper. You know, and when I grew up feeling that I give the best of myself when I give something that I can. And I urge you to treat your children, your grandchildren, anybody you have influence to urge them to share this innermost part of them, because it's a gift. And even coloring, making that, you know, they don't have to stay in the lines. You can have purple trees. And my granddaughter used to do the most wonderful coloring, and it would be something, we did something like this. I don't know if I can see on here. You just do all kinds of things, and come up with something like this.
It's called squiggle.
Yeah, you know, squiggle. And then we'd take different colors. She would take different colors, and then just shade in or do whatever. And then you'd come up with this wonderful design and blend of really lovely art that everyone is different. And it's a lovely way if you don't have a, you know, something handy to color with a child. And then just sort of see what you can make out of it, or maybe hidden inside of this somewhere is you know, like a sculpture that comes out of a piece of stone. Maybe there's something in there that will emerge as you color it. And it's a wonderful thing to do with children. Anyway, that's just a little, we're talking about creativity today, so that's just a little talk. And I was looking at these, they left behind, and I thought, what can we do with these? Now this is the, I don't suggest that there's maybe not anything you can do with them except tie something with them, but, you could wrap them around a vase and varnish them, or you could tie balloons on the top, or make a dolly swing. when I think about creativity, this is what I think about. And maybe this is the time when we need to be more creative than at any other time. We need to try to solve the problems that we face in a different way.
I might say that the granddaughter was visiting. It was my granddaughter, who was, 12 or 13, and her father called and said, "How's Ashley doing?" And I said, "Oh, they're all busy," because Carol's oldest granddaughter in that house was
at that time was about seven.
I says, "Oh, they're all, Ashley's coloring with Madeline." Her father says, "Ashley doesn't color anymore.
She's too old."
And I said, "Well, for Carol's, the three of them."
Just something from our, just to share a little something out from our book. In trying to write the experience of that we've had, and here again, this is sort of something that you remember and that you bridge, and maybe, and we have some new marriages here, and maybe this will say something to you. We could never tell each other how it was to be married to someone else. When we spoke in different languages of love, met another's eyes with looks of disbelief or an acknowledgement of some small irony. You cannot know how I reacted to lonely midnights, lay awake to watch the clock slow, stop at 3 a.m. Would you be surprised to learn I could not cry when my mother died? I can imagine you, brown curly hair, above the perplexed frown. Did you walk the floor, try to soothe the crying baby, letting Libby sleep? Where did you learn to hold me when I'm angry, allow me to talk as you listen, knowing I have no need for you to do the night on the white charger thing, try to make things right? We have so seldom been apart. Once you went to an office every day, solved problems, dictated letters. What excited you? Formulating chemicals, planting roses on Sunday morning. Sometimes I wish you could picture how I looked as a young bride, when I blushed easily, hid my shyness with a smile, or the way I walked at 35, wearing a drop-dead jumpsuit, approving glances followed as I moved. Our spouses died. They will never know these years of aging. We express our fears of disease, lingering death, enjoy the peace of slow Monday, early dinner of the senior special, the lovely choice of buying tickets or staying home. Well, I was trying to get some ideas of what you might think about writing, and we were thinking about this last week, and maybe what you might be thinking about is what from your past changed your life in some way. Is there any special thing that came out that made you more able to survive this week?
Yes.
This past week. And when you, tomorrow we'll talk more about journaling. And somehow we have to use things that we are to, you know, we have to draw from all of our past and the essence of ourselves when we face grief like we have. So you might think about that overnight. I don't know how much writing you really want to do, whether you really want some writing in class or just want to hear the, you know, that would be one thing that we could write about would be, and then I have a handout sheet here a little later. You have something else to add at the moment?
Not at all. We're hoping for expression.
Would anybody like to share some of their past memories or when they felt that they were being especially creative? Do you think of yourself as creative?
I would like to accept the challenge of writing music for the cowboy song.
Oh,
okay. Photo copy the one and I'll write it.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's terrific. That's being open for the possibilities of the new day, do you think of yourself as creative people? Do you think of it individually? Is this something that's foreign to you? Most people didn't grow up in a family that I did.
Well, I think of myself as a creative person, but I've not ever taken the time to try to express that, except for periodic journaling on paper, uh-huh. And that's what I was hoping you would do.
Yes. I do have, you know, mm-hmm. ways to, and that will be the main topic for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But journaling is the best way to begin to if you want to write about your experiences, is to begin to keep a journal. And there's lots of different ways to keep a journal.
Well, I would like to tell you about a fantastic journal that we have that is called The Diaries. Irwin's dad began a diary in 1916. He kept it until he died in 1964. Hmm. His mother picked it up and wrote it. And for a short time, I wrote, and then we have about 7 years that nobody did. Irwin is now writing it, but it's a daily diary. The father that did this at the beginning wrote very precise, small writing every day, a full page, including facts. Wow. He was a historian, and it's a wonderful source of history for our county that we live in, because I would like someday to see if it could be reproduced in the way it is with his handwriting, which is just marvelous. He taught school and very precise, nice. But it is quite a record when you consider 1916 to now it's 2001.
Well, you know, you're going from a rural horse and buggy economy to...
Well, his family immigrated from Sweden, and his mother kept a diary in Swedish, that is the old script and the old Swedish, and it's lost out there because it's even people who read and write Swedish now cannot do it.
You said he was a good historian. Did he put in any of his feelings as far as World War One and the happenings of the or the changing face of the world?
He recorded facts. I didn't ever get a feeling of an emotional. He did. He was a block warden, and they pulled the.
And how about her? Can you and your husband now even go back and look at that and begin to put some feelings in about? Because I had a grandmother. My grandfather was a minister, and in 1916. She actually left him and went off with her boarder. Started all the rest of her life.
I was looking at her.
remarkable woman. And she took the youngest child with her, and the others were all in their late teens. But she went with Mr. White, and I never knew him by any other name, and they homesteaded in a log house in New Mexico, and I have pictures of her standing with a gun and skins hanging behind her, practically the only picture I have of her.
I would love to know what she thought.
Mm-hmm. I do know that she hated the missionary. The only thing my father told me was that she hated the missionary barrel, that the ladies of the church would get it together and, you know, be sending it to overseas to missionary, but they let my grandmother look in it first so she could pick out kids, clothes for her family. Mm-hmm. And it just, well, I guess it just did something to her, among a lot, you know, other things. I don't know, I really don't know, and I wish I did. You know, I've tried to fictionalize the story and wonder what she felt. And, but I don't know. So, yeah.
Over the last two or three years, we've been reading the Oregon Journals of people coming across the Oregon Trail. It's been very interesting. The women write, oh, three more graves today, this happened, so-and-so, you know, helped so-and-so. The men write, the weather fair, major miles. So I think there's a basic difference in the way men and women look at life and what we write down.
Right.
I'm more apt to write something emotional now. John keeps two pages every day.
Uh-huh.
And he does exactly, he'll write news. He might write a quote out of a book he's reading, and he writes down the weather, and it's very factual. And I say, what do you feel about that? I don't write my feelings, I write facts.
He's a historian.
That's right. Uh-huh. That's right.
My mom was a late child, and her nearest sibling was 8 years older than she. And when her last sibling, my Aunt Marty, died, before she died, she came and stayed with us. Her son brought her up from Nebraska, and she had the most wonderful things to tell. Those things that happened before my mom was even born, you know, and then that, so that I had didn't have those in my head until she came, and I have to write that down.
And this is what we all say, and in a way, beginning to write your memoirs and thinking about this creative process. my tongue gets out of my head sometimes. It's like having a big tree fall. You know, and you're thinking, okay, I've lived this many years, and here's a story. I was born, I don't know, yay many years ago, and I went to school here. And it's a tremendous task. But if you begin to break it up and say, well, I've been thoughtful in here, and just so that, I guess that was why I tried to pick out just one thing from today when we were talking about, and we'll get into the memoirs a little more about how to you know, pull out specific things in your life that would have meaning for your children and what were the changing things. But we need to begin to think of this, you know, not from a right brain, but from a left brain side, but use your creative side and think about the process and what motivated you, what changed you, what somebody said to you sometimes, what did you read, who affected you the most. But I think these are things we can give our children. I have an interesting handout here. I don't know how many we have for you here. We think we'll be pretty close.
Do you need me to go run some more?
Uh-huh.
Do you need me to go run some more?
I don't know how many are. Wait, maybe the couples could share. Let's try and see. And actually, if you don't get one today, we have a little computer. I think we can talk a little bit about.
You got this up?
Yeah, I have one. Just
put some of the head of the table. Oh, I don't know how many couples there are at the table. I only set up the chairs and counted the pictures. But I already forgot.
Okay.
There's some modern thing, you know, they have the 10 characteristics of an organized person. They have writing in our family, but I was sure glad that my mother wrote her obituary. Because she had a lot of things.
I want to hear what the mom says.
We need to take a lot of time with this. I just thought I'd hear what the mom says.
You've got to call off your altar. Announce the band's name.
Maybe we have someone from that country. There's no way I can.
Ooh, boy.
But I guess what I found here, maybe I handed this out, but this is such a general kind of thing in a sense, and yet we all are so complex. We are so many things, because I know of myself that I love to be with people. I love to give parties. I love to talk and talk, and sometimes it's even better I talk too much. But I also love my quiet time. And I need my times alone, and I can just think and need to give myself permission. I used to feel like I had to get a sore throat in order to stay in bed all day and read. And I finally learned that I didn't have to have a sore throat. I could give myself permission to just be and sit in my favorite chair and think with a pad of paper on my lap. And this is what I'm urging you all to do, is to think of yourself that you have these gifts, you have this to give. I don't think we need to go over in class. I just wanted to, you know, for them to be thinking. And if you want to write tonight, and here again, please remember that there is a science sheet you'd like me to talk to you one-on-one. And then if any of you do write anything tonight, we can spend the first little bit of time tomorrow sharing some of that, if those of you who want to share it. You know, some things are very personal and you may not want to, and that's always your choice.
You want me to read this?
Yeah, this is fun.
You can get inspiration for a poem for writing many things. I picked up, again, a copy of the New Yorker, read it ahead. So that's the first stanza in the paragraph. The ad reads, "Love is all you need. Everything included for couples at one single price. Relax on the Caribbean's finest white sand beaches, luxury in ultra suites. Experience every land and water sport. Savor anytime snacks. Unlimited premium brand drinks. 38 gourmet restaurants. And be moved by a staff as warm as the Caribbean sun. All inclusive. All in the name of love. Do you suppose, my dear, it's like the ad? Can we pack enough of our zest for life and borrow places in two suitcases? We will need traveler's checks. It's only a two for one, so I'll bring a few. Put in swimsuits, even though we probably won't relax on their white sand beach. By the way, how do we luxuriate in ultra suites, but it can't be better than the region by the other 355 beds we can share. Hope you have room for fishing tackle, clubs, and bowling ball, because I would hate to miss a sport. Wonder if we can have our anytime snacks on the balcony, like that afternoon overlooking the Ouds in Baden-Baden. Unlimited premium brand drinks. Nothing tastes better than Chandon
on a cruise. There are 38 gourmet restaurants in a week. Remember Parral on the hilltop in Altea, Spain? The Haggis at Blarney Farms in Cross Michael's County. The staff is going to be warm by the time they move us before our stay is over. All in the name of love, all inclusive. I don't think there's any connection between what we feel and this Madison Avenue concept. Besides, all the luggage in the world wouldn't begin to hold all the love I have for you. Come, put your arms around me. Give me a kiss. I'll call the 800 number. See if they have a senior discount.
You all have stories. You all are special. We are sharing a little bit of our lives with you, but I wish I could hear from each of you. Everyone is unique. Everyone has a gift and a story to tell. And I want so for you to share it in whatever way. And this week we will explore other ways to do that. Does anybody have any questions or anything?
Have you found that writing, when you've been teaching classes and things, it has been a help to people who are in times of crisis?
Oh, by all means, surely. In fact, this is my whole life. From a personal standpoint, as I say, I've always been a poet, and so you can read my poems over the years, and they reflect exactly what I'm feeling at the moment, and it's a way to get your feelings out. And if you're not a poet, what we'll talk about tomorrow, the journaling, will help you get. And I'm sure I started a thing this week. We had the most wonderful experience. Some of you that are from Portland area, maybe I'll go ahead and share this now. We were so hurting, we stopped in Portland with Robert's daughter and her husband. And they love birds and have watched them all, sought them all over the world, and are settled in Portland now. And they read in their Audubon book that this was exactly the time of the year for 2 weeks when the swifts come through. They're on their migration, and there's a great tall chimney. What they really want are hollow trees. But, of course, our civilization has encroached, though, and there's not many, so they find abandoned chimneys. And as dusk approaches, they're feeding. They begin to gather more and more, and they're eating the insects just at dusk. And then all of a sudden, but for no reason, nobody knows, they will begin to spiral. And it looks like backward smoke. They'll begin to spiral down into this tall, it was about a three-story chimney. And this evening, there were about 150 of us gathered on a grassy knoll behind the school, where we knew the swifts would be doing this. And just to see that many people coming to watch birds. And it's not just a few. We're talking 40,000 birds. Little. But it was just like black smoke in the sky as they began to spiral. And I wonder if the first ones don't go all the way down, because it's about a three-story chimney. But they spiral. And they don't always make it the first time around. And a few of them, so they just keep the vortex. And as I was trying to come to terms with this week, I sat down at our laptop in my room, and I was trying to describe the scene. And here we are, here these birds looking, and what they do is they find a shelter, and they come together for warmth and warmth and support, and they're safe for the night. And this is really what we're all doing. We're all gathering. We're all coming together to get our help and warmth and support from each other at this terrible time in our nation's history. And what we're looking for is each other and the true knowledge of that opportunity that God is imparting on us. That we are here in God's love. And we can come together and we can wait. And This is so, this was my, what came out this week was that as the swifts look for shelter in this chimney, we have all come together and look to each other to support us through this time, mm-hmm. that, so that we can go home and into the another day, but secure that whenever we need it, like the chimney, God's love will surround us and give us nourishment. I think that's really, I guess I didn't quite fill up our whole time, but we can talk informally, or if someone wants to talk to me. Does anybody else have anything else to say? I have one other poem I'll close with. I wouldn't. Are you all familiar with William Stafford? You know, he's in here again. I picked this out because it's says so much about what we've experienced this week. But it was, William Stafford lived from 1914 to 1993. Time wants to show you a different country. It's the one that your life conceals, the one waiting outside when curtains are drawn, the one grandmother hinted at in her crochet design, the one almost found over at the edge of the music after the sermons. It's the way life is, and you have it, a few years given. You get killed now and then, violated in various ways, and sometimes it's turnabout. You get tired of that. Long suffering, you wait and pray, and maybe good things come. Maybe the hurt slackens and you hardly feel it anymore. You have a breath without pain. It's called happiness. It's a balance. The taking and passing along, the composing of where you've been and how people and weather treated you. It's a country where you already are, bringing where you have been. Time offers this gift in its millions of ways, turning the world, moving the air, calling every morning, here, take it, it's yours.
Do you have any questions? was a minimum wage that first year I did. Because exactly. One year I only had four children. First year I had seven. And then there would have been only two children left in the school the next year, so one of the board members gave food to a family if they would. So there's a guy and just this year I have gotten an email from one of those girls that I had, I think, 64 years ago, whatever it was, in the ninth grade. So I've been in contact with
I wondered two things.